In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Fanbase Deep Dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 146. John Senecal, Brian Shackman here. We're, you know, a week or so into the season. You're feeling it. I'm getting stupid texts between you and producer Matt Saroy's about every inning up and down. Oh, no. Oh, yay. We're going to lose. We won. You're annoying me already.
And I tried to compliment your Red Sox, and you were
that
like...
That was sarcastic.
No, it wasn't.
It was.
I was complimenting your rotation.
It's the first week.
And you're literally like, it's Oakland.
Well, it is.
I know, but it's still... I mean, you're still throwing strikes and getting people out.
I think the 2004 Rockettes could beat Oakland
today.
These
cats rock.
Here's my ultimate point about the beginning of the season. I truly feel like you can lose it in the first month.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But you can't win it. No. Right. So the thing is, if you go 10 games below 500 in the first month, you're screwed. But if you're 10 games up, you can still blow it. So it's not, you know what I mean? Like, you want to come out of this. I think the Red Sox coming out of Seattle, where they could have been swept or they could have swept. I think of Moneyball, since Matt and I on my regular job at hosting the morning show on WTIC 1080. He's been playing Moneyball clips all week. But you want to come out of it. You know how he says you just got to be 7 games out or whatever, 7 games over 500. The Red Sox just want to hang around and see, you know, and hanging around is all I need. And they're not as good as the Orioles or the Yankees, but if they can hang around, I'm fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly. I mean, if you're hanging around, you're good, right? If you're not the Mets who haven't won, you're not the Marlins who haven't won. That's not good. I mean, if you're 0-7 to start the season, you're digging your way up.
I would almost argue with some of those teams, you're done.
Right.
I mean, the Yankees have proved in some recent years that bad starts can be overcome, but the Yankees are a different animal.
You always want to start out good because it sets a tone, right? It obviously sets a tone.
But it bothers me when people say, well, there's 162. It's not that big a deal. I totally disagree. I mean, I think it really does matter.
Well, if you've watched baseball at all, especially with the expanded playoff system in the last 5, 10, 15 years, you know that it most of the time, no matter what, every time it will come down to one game somewhere. Somewhere.
Yep.
In baseball, or it's tied, and you got to play an extra game. So no, don't tell me these games don't matter in April.
What do you like about the Yankees? You like Verdugo now, huh?
Well, I mean, Verdugo I've said it from day one. He brings a different look to the team. He brings some pizzazz to the team. He brings, and now it's the dog mentality or whatever. You know, I mean, he's flashy, right? But he's also a good player.
Judge seems to like him.
Well, Judge was one of the main reasons he got him there. I mean, Judge, I guess, has been pressing to get him on that team for a couple of years now.
Do they have a relationship?
I have no idea. I think it's just something that he likes his way he plays the game, I think.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You can react to this because in some ways, even star players, they don't get a lot of interview or pressure to talk, this or that. Everything sort of falls on Judge, right? And I think other players, they sort of benefit from not having to be front and center. And I think Verdugo is not a superstar, and he's not anywhere on the level of Judge, but because of his personality, he'll garner a lot of clubhouse attention from the media.
He's like Swisher. He's
right,
like a Swisher kind
of
player.
That's a good thing for Judge because it takes a little heat off him to always be talking. You agree with that?
Yeah, and I think between him and Soto, the vibe on that team, it just did a complete 180 from the typical Yankee thing. I mean, like, when you watch Soto, it's like... It's almost like watching elements of like Reggie Jackson and like, you know, some of these other, like
a little bit of Griffey
and like those guys. I mean, he, like the other night, he called out a balk. He called out a balk. Like, and he's literally like animated about it. And he's, you know, doing the shuffle and all that. It's really different to see from a Yankee fan perspective because you haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, because they've been boring.
Exactly.
And they haven't been winning either. So maybe this is something that'll work for him. I mean, it's sort of like the Damon Swisher kind of phase.
Yes, yes. I mean, as a Yankee fan, you got to be excited because you start out the season great, right? But that being said, I still believe there are some issues. I think that Clay Holmes scares the hell out of me. He has scared me since he couldn't get it together after the All-Star break, I believe was 2 years ago. You know, he was like one of the best pitcher closers in baseball. Then he hasn't really done anything since other than be shaky. I mean, I don't really care how much run you got or how much vertical whatever you got. He is not – Yankees aren't going to win a World Series with Clay Holmes as their closer.
So they'll have to make a move.
Either they're going to have to get somebody or they're going to have to make a move internally because he's just way too shaky for such a good bullpen. I mean, the Yankees' bullpen is really good. It was great last year, and he was shaky. So you can't have that 7-8 inning be so lights out, and all of a sudden, ninth inning, you're sitting there thinking, are we going to win this game? You want that ninth inning to be like, we're winning this game.
Right.
And every time Clay Holmes comes in, I don't think there's any Yankee fan who's paid attention at all that thinks you're going to absolutely win the game.
I think it's one of the easier things to do. You can clip a closer from a crappy team late in the season. I feel like that's doable from a trade perspective. Looking at the schedule, the Yankee schedule is pretty soft until they get to Milwaukee, Baltimore, and Detroit, and then Houston again. I mean, they have.
I mean, Toronto always gives the Yankees problems.
I know, but they're not
always.
But they're not quite as good. And then I think Tampa's not quite as good. And then you have a bunch of Oakland and Cleveland in there as well. I don't know. I just think that the Yankees are poised to have a really good start if those things work themselves out. I don't know. I mean, the closer stuff. I mean, it's probably the 150th thing on my list to think about the Yankees closer. But if you
follow the team, I mean, right now, I would be concerned about Anthony Volpe's throwing issues.
What, he's got four errors?
He's got two errors.
Through Thursday?
Right. He's got two errors, but I would think he could probably have at least three, given, like, his... I think didn't get charged with one.
Is it just making mistakes, or has he got mental issues
here? I think he had 16 all of last season. He won a gold glove. Right?
Really?
Yeah. So it's interesting that he has this many already. So I don't know. I'm a little nervous about it. And that they're throwing errors too, which it's not like they're fielding errors. Right. Throwing errors, all of a sudden everyone starts thinking about Chuck Knobloch and Steve Sachs. They can't throw the ball to first base, but he's also at shortstop. So that is a little concerning, and Clay Holmes is concerning. Other than that, I know Nestor Cortez is a little bit of an issue. I think he's been the one weak spot in the starting rotation. Surprisingly, Carlos Rodon has been serviceable. He stayed in it. He's given up in what, two runs? He gave up a home. Both were solo shots his last start. So it's not like the guy we all thought was going to be an issue is an issue right now. So that's good.
Before we move on to something else, anything else across the league that's caught your eye?
Well, I mean, obviously the Tigers, the Pirates starting out good, regardless of
Pirates and the Brewers always seem to start well.
Yeah.
And the Pirates will fade.
They should all fade, but you know, we talked about it before. The divisions that they're in could lead to them not fading.
Right.
Both central division teams. I had talked about concern about Bryce Harper, then he goes out and strings out three home runs.
That guy's awesome.
You know, Trout hasn't really done much since opening day, I believe, or he's had a couple home runs. I mean, the fireworks opening day were nice with the fights and the potential fights, and you know, Reese Hoskins and McNeil at second base going at it. So I mean, it's baseball. I mean, it's not quite your drop down hockey fight at the beginning of a game, but
for me. I mean, Mookie Betts is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I just really, and you could say, oh, why can't we keep that? That's a stupid argument for the past. I just, like, the guy is just incredible.
He was going to be my pick for National League MVP before the season.
And
I hate to say it now because he's hit, what, six home runs or something like that.
He's batting 500 or whatever. But Ohtani, you know, Matt Soroy's our producer, pointed this out. You haven't heard people?
Crickets.
Not a word.
Absolute crickets.
About the gambling stuff.
At all. Not
I
like,
wonder if they won't follow through the investigation. Just
well, I wonder if it's not, they ain't going to say anything. They're not going to say anything until the feds say something. Because you know the feds are going to have to do something, right? Because it's out there and they're investigating the so-called bookie.
Right.
So something is going to happen somewhere.
Right.
But I think Major League Baseball is probably like, listen, if we just shut up now. And don't say anything. No one's talking about it. So let it just be. And then eventually maybe it pops up as something 5 months from now, or how the federal government works. Who knows? A year from now.
Right. When they exonerate him or something.
Right.
They can just move forward. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a fair point.
I mean, just to go back a little bit, you know, I was giving him the benefit of doubt in the last episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
About the whole, you know, con man thing. But then the more and more I think about it, if somehow this dude did lose $4.5 million over the course of some time, and regardless of how that went missing, it's like, why are you giving anybody but yourself or your wife, who you didn't have at the time, access to your bank accounts.
That's where we got hung up.
It's just like that. I can't get over that one thing. I can understand how it could go missing.
Unless he stole it.
I can understand how it could go missing if you stole it and said it was for this or that, and you built it up somehow, right? Because this guy was apparently making between $300,000 and $500,000 a year as an interpreter, and they can't even say how much. So who knows if he was, Shohei needs him to go run down to Southern California to do something for him, and next thing you know, that costs $100,000 or something, you know, and he just swindled him, but $4.5 million.
So, I mean, I don't care who you are. That's
and that's what I can't get over. That smells to me.
Yeah, no doubt. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. I did want to spend a minute talking about Larry Lucchino, who passed away at the age of 78. He, of course, part of the ownership group that came in the early part of this century and built the Red Sox, into what they are today. Forget about what's happening right now. He hasn't been directly involved with the day-to-day in a couple of years. And I had the chance to interview Larry a bunch of times when I was both at CNBC and also locally in Boston. And I know a lot of people who worked for him for a long time. Not an easy guy to work for. Not an easy guy. Doesn't suffer fools. You know, this is a guy who played on a Final Four team at Princeton, went to Yale Law School, and basically, went through and made Baltimore Orioles relevant again with their stadium, did the same thing in San Diego, made this incredible decision, which I'll get into, not to build a new Fenway, which people don't talk about enough. And then he transformed Worcester by moving the Pawtucket Red Sox to Worcester and building this stadium there, and then sold a AAA team for $60 million or thereabouts. I mean, the guy was an amazing baseball executive. I think it's kind of crazy that he wasn't already in the Hall of Fame. And for me, he almost like didn't care about anything other than getting done what he felt like needed to get done. In some ways, that's really hard. But when you're right most of the time, I think it's amazing. And he's the one who saw Sam Kennedy and Theo Epstein and said, these are really great baseball guys, and I'm gonna bring him along for the ride. And of course, Theo is so talented, he eventually outgrew Larry. So all the crap that Larry would do.
He basically encouraged Theo to go to law school, right?
Yeah, he basically was grooming him. I mean, he looked at Theo as the future commissioner of baseball,
right,
which may well happen if he doesn't get the ownership thing that he wants. And I guess greatness, as we talk about with Belichick or anybody, like, it has its blind spots, and he was not always easy. But like, I will tell you, the one thing I want to focus on is that I thought that they should have built a new Fenway Park. I thought there's not a chance they could redeem that place. And I thought, you're going to sink bad money after good just to save a stupid wall.
Right.
I was like, just do a replica or whatever. And it turns out I was 100% wrong. You know, I mean, what they did, and again, from 02 or 03 to like 18, I mean, he was gone before that, but like, there wasn't a bigger profit engine or more popular place to be in all of baseball, I'm sorry, than Fenway Park. And now it sucks now because the team stinks and nobody cares, but people still go there to visit it. So I just think the guy was amazing, regardless of how you felt about him personally or whatever. I think that in terms of baseball, he was a savant.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate you don't learn a lot about people until they pass away, right? Especially for someone.
I knew this stuff.
Well, for me, like, you've known the guy, right? I've met him and interviewed him. I didn't know anything other than the fact that he was involved with the Red Sox, and during the formidable years where the Yankees and Red Sox were going at it, and the Yankees were losing.
He coined the evil empire.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but then when you read about him and you realize that, aside from all the other stuff, you know, the awards and everything, what he did for Major League Baseball and how he transformed the aspect of the modernization of baseball stadiums.
Right.
And I think in a way that might have been because of Fenway Park, because he wanted to bring that old bowl and get rid of that and bring it more to an intimate atmosphere,
right,
which he did in Petco Park and Camden Yards. That is probably the big reason why he did not want to change Fenway Park.
And it was smart. I mean, it, I think the quote was like, why do you want to repaint the Mona Lisa or whatever? But he was the one who said, I don't want concrete, I want bricks and steel. And it turns out he was right. And the baseball is a nostalgia game. you can't not love baseball and not be a nostalgic human being. And so why wouldn't you want to go to a park that invokes that? And at Fenway Park for a stretch, and again, it's changed for me. I mean, my nephew listens to the podcast. He gets on my case for being so negative. Like, I don't have the same feeling about it as I did 20 years ago. Maybe that's just getting older, or maybe that's winning 4 World Series, or maybe that's – I don't know what it is. But I will tell you, going to Fenway Park in 2003, 4, 5, 6, and 7 was the most – as fun as anything I could do. I mean, it just was, and I think Larry has a ton to do that. So anyway, I just wanted to say a quick note on Larry Lucchino, and a couple of my friends worked for him a long time and are so loyal, and he wasn't well for a long time. People I talk to say that it's almost relief that he's not suffering because he's had a tough go. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is the 146th edition of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Got a couple quick stories from the minors.
Yeah,
you got to tell the story. This guy in Philly, I had no idea the story. It's one of those legendary, epic stories.
Yeah. So his name is Ricardo Pinto, and he's a pitcher for the Phillies. And ironically, it's this happened on the same night that Bryce Harper hit 3 home runs. So it's even more overshadowed how crazy this is. So this guy hasn't pitched in the major league since 2019.
Whoa.
And it was with the Tampa Bay Rays.
So he's not a prospect or anything. He's like a 4A guy.
He's been around since 2012 when he was drafted by the Phillies.
Wow.
So he's been around forever. And he's been in the Mexican League, the Venezuelan winter leagues. And that's where he was just before this season. Got another shot with the Phillies. He's like 30 years old. He's in Rochester, New York, going to pitch for the Phillies AAA team.
Yeah, the Red Wings.
Well, I think they're like the Iron Pigs. They were in Rochester.
Right, gotcha.
So he gets the call to come to Philly. He needs to pitch in Philly. So, I mean, there's not many flights probably out of Philly to Rochester on a Tuesday night, right?
That fit your time schedule.
Exactly. So they get him an Uber.
All the way from
Rochester to Philly, which is probably about 4 hours. And gets stuck in traffic, gets to the game late, and winds up how late? Like I don't know, like fourth inning or something.
Game's already going,
and he gets there late. Yeah, and then winds up coming in and throwing a 4-inning save, and getting his first appearance since 2019, and gets a save. On a night Bryce Harper hits 3 home runs in the rain.
In some ways, that's the perfect way to do it, though, because he doesn't have time to think or get nervous.
Right.
He's just
it was a rain delay game, so that helped because it was pushed back. But still, it's like...
That's crazy.
Crazy story.
Does he have... I don't know. What's his name again?
Ricardo Pinto.
Had he recorded a major league save before?
I wonder. Good question. Let's see.
That's a great story.
He has definitely recorded a save, but let's see, Major League? No. I do not believe he's had a Major League save. No, that was his first ever Major League save.
See, that's just perfect.
Yeah.
And the other one I heard about briefly was the offensive output of the Orioles. Was it AAA too?
AAA Norfolk, yeah. And they've been the minor league season starts a little bit later, right? So they're a few days behind, but they're like four games in, and this team has been raking. Now, this is the team that has, of course, everyone knows about Jackson Holliday, who's the huge prospect who didn't make the...
And that's all for service time, right?
But they also have a bunch of other, as my son would call them, cats that should have made the team.
Cats
that didn't make the team. Connor Norby, Heston Kerstad, Kobe Mayo, Kyle Stowers, those are the main names that are all pretty much major league ready players, right? But they're huge prospects. And these guys are all in their low 20s or not even 20 yet, like Jackson Holliday. So if you're thinking that the Orioles aren't going to be poised to make a run down the stretch, they can literally go out and get anybody they want with this and not even dent their core of talent that they got.
Yeah, and they might not want to give up too many.
Let's just listen to go through some of these numbers. You got it pulled up?
I got the game.
The game. The box score. The big one is Heston Kerstad, who's an outfielder who should be on the team. He was up of the team last year.
He's a legit prospect.
Legit prospect. 5-for-7 with 10 RBIs in a game.
4 runs scored.
Yeah.
And he struck out once.
Yeah, there was 26 runs in this game and 29 hits by Norfolk. And I thought one of the funny things this poor guy, Kobe Mayo. He only gets 1 RBI and goes 5-for-7. He only gets one RBI.
Because the bases were empty.
Yeah, the other guys are knocking him in.
He bats right after Kjerstad, yeah. So he had nothing to hit to.
Poor Jackson Holliday, who's batting 400 as in this game, since this game, is only got two RBIs and five runs scored.
It goes Kjerstad, Mayo, then this guy Stowers, who went 4-for-7 and had seven RBI because Mayo was always on base.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. And these guys have been, I mean, they have been knocking the ball around, but I mean, obviously not to this magnitude, but to look at that and to think that this is what these guys are doing at AAA pitching. Now, if you knock that in half, all these guys are legit prospects that have shown that they can hit major league pitching.
So the headline says the best minor league team in baseball history, right? And then the next line is that they might not be together very long.
Yeah, well,
would you torch some of these pieces to pick up a rent-a-pitcher to win a World Series?
No, absolutely. And like I said, it's not going to dent them. It's not going to dent them because if you're looking at these guys, like you got a first baseman, a left fielder, a second baseman or shortstop with Holliday. Norby's an outfielder. Kjerstad's an outfielder. Mayo's a first baseman. Stowers is a DH, right? So you got basically the Orioles have Cedric Mullins,
right?
Austin Hayes, Anthony Santander. Those guys are all big league talent. Two of them are all-stars, right? Then you got Mountcastle at first. The only big question is probably second base, who's Jordan Westbrook, who's a big prospect. And then you flip-flop these other guys, Jorge Mateo in. You got Gunnar Henderson.
Right, they got maybe the best pitch catcher in the league.
Right. So you're not hurting for outfield talent.
I always worry about trading away prospects, but you're right. I mean, if they're a pitcher away, they're going to deal some of these guys. I just, you know, I hate to be the next Hall of Famer.
Well, you look at like the Yankees, team, right? And everyone's like, well, you can't trade Spencer Jones. You can't trade Spencer Jones. These guys got four Spencer Joneses sitting there to be traded. At least three. So if I'm the American League East and everybody else in baseball right now, and they have the best minor league system in baseball, I'd be nervous. If the Orioles are in it with that new ownership who just took control with money to spend.
By the way, if I was an owner, I would do the same. You saw the story about them buying beers in the bar. Did we talk about that last week? I just think that, like, if I was an owner, that's what I would do, like, all the time. And I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but, like, little things at work, we did talk about this. Like, little things at work help morale. Like, literally, if you're a billionaire, you go to in some rando bar and spend $2,000 to make a bunch of people bananas happy. Like, why wouldn't you do that all the time? That's why I don't understand, like, these people. I know that's sort of how they become billionaires, but like, I don't understand why their customer service is so crappy, because it doesn't take much to make us want to spend more.
And you can do it at, as I say, like the point of sale. I mean, that's you doing it. You don't need a PR team. You don't need five or six people walking around with you to make that happen.
Or some strategy or some sort of rollout campaign.
Or some event.
Just go down to the bar, slap down the plastic, and have a ball.
Right. I mean,
why wouldn't you, if you owned a team, do that?
Put it on the black card.
Seriously. Who cares? All right, that's it for me. Anything else on your mind?
I'm excited. I mean, it's great. I mean, you got, like you just said, we got guys in AAA that are knocking up 29 runs, and Major League Baseball is exciting right now.
I'm into the Orioles. I am into the – I hate to say it because they're in the division, but I like the Orioles. I don't know how you can not like them.
No, you can't. I mean, it's funny. My son said that. We're watching the game the other night, and they're like, we love the Orioles, we like the team, but we don't want them to win.
Right.
So it's a dilemma if you're a baseball fan, right? But for the Yankees right now, it's looking good, and we'll see how the Red Sox pan out when they actually play some talented teams.
Right. And just an FYI, this would be a bigger factor 25, 30 years ago or 40 years ago when only one or two teams would make the postseason. Like, the Orioles and the Yankees can both make it.
Right.
That's a question of where would they be somewhere else. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This has been episode 146. A Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.